provides programming not heard anywhere else on or off the radio. If you have a program and would like to join us, time is available at $50 per hour or $35 per half hour. You can write to WBCQ at WBCQ.com for more details. If you are a listener and would like to help the station grow, you can visit WBCQ at WBCQ.com to donate and help us expand our offerings even more. You can also find our program schedules for all of our frequencies on the website. We also have a Facebook page, WBCQ The Planet.
This is the world-famous WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA.
This is the planet.
WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is Radio Angela.
On tonight's episode of Hobby Broadcasting Radio, we are featuring a few minutes of shortwave pirate news and audio clips, followed by an interview with The Dude, a legal but unlicensed micropower broadcaster, who is now celebrating 40 years of activity this month. You may contact us at info@hobbybroadcasting.com, whether to comment on the programming, request a QSL, or just to say hi. We hope you enjoy tonight's episode of Hobby Broadcasting Radio.
Welcome to tonight's episode of Hobby Broadcasting Radio. This is our fourth show, and they've all been a bit different from each other. Tonight we're featuring Part 15 unlicensed but legal enthusiast, The Dude, who is celebrating 40 years of activity this month. Before we get into the interview, I want to play a few recent shortwave pirate radio clips because we've had plenty to listen to over the past month. The clips I'm playing now are representative of just a fraction of the activity that's been on. Some of the stations not featured tonight but have been active include Zeki, WUBR, Ultra Shortwave Radio, Partial India Radio, Radio Ice Cream, XFM, WDOG, Radio Mushroom, Outhouse Radio, Radio Free Whatever, Psycho Radio, Pee-wee, Yaman Radio, Captain Morgan Shortwave, Metal Dog, Radio 48, Pig's Knuckles, and more. Most activity is still between 6850 and 6975, or 4015 and 4185 kilohertz in the evening hours. But broadcasting has picked up a bit just above the AM band from 1710 to 1740 kilohertz, and Mix Radio International has been all over the shortwave bands. So we'll start tonight's clips with Cloud Splitter Radio, which is a new station that's been really active with a variety of relays of old-time radio shows, science fiction, and more. This is Cloud Splitter Radio on February 28th on 6945 kilohertz USB at 2109 UTC.
Who also composed the music? Journey into Space was written and produced for the BBC by Charles Chilton.
All the best in classic science fiction radio dramas. This is Cloud Splitter Radio.
Ion Radio has continued to be active with good signals and great audio, but Ion has started broadcasting on weekday afternoons. They had just been on weekends. Here's a sample from February 16th on 6955 kilohertz at about 2246 UTC.
Thanks for listening to Ion Radio. ionradioshortwave@gmail.com. Your reception reports are always appreciated. Looking for more IO radio on the 43 meter band. This is IO radio signing off.
Someone was relaying classic sci-fi pirate KIPM on February 15th at 6955 kilohertz USB at about 2132 UTC. Alan Maxwell's sci-fi dramas are always creepy to hear on the radio and perfect for shortwave. As I mentioned earlier, Mix Radio International has been heard all over the shortwave bands with big signals and great audio. One thing that I don't hear much about, though, in the logs and the comments is the pro audio production of their IDs and promos. This clip is from February 12th on 7540 kHz USB at 2226 UTC.
Hello, all you listeners to this free independent music station. All you listeners are now.
Radio on March 4th at 1917 UTC on 2069 kHz. Three of their shows were aired consecutively, and Pseudo Radio was probably best known for sending out wooden plaque QSLs. Thunder Chicken Radio has been really active with music programs and occasional SSTV images, but they do also air audio IDs. This is from February 7th on 6955 kHz USB at 020 UTC. SWL Winterfest was virtual this year, but the unofficial pirate radio station of the fest, the voice of Pancho Villa, was real. I heard this on March 5th on 4080 kHz at 0513 UTC.
And following customer for Voice of Pancho Villa at Yahoo.com. Voice of Pancho Villa at Yahoo.com.
I heard Poppy Pirate WAVE on February 6th on 6925 kHz USB at 0057 UTC.
Listening to Wave Radio, WAVE. I hope you will join us again as we explore the ether.
Not to be confused with longtime pirate WEAK, WEEK was heard on February 5th on 6975.6 kilohertz at 2234 UTC. WEEK, also calling itself Week Radio, plays songs about the days of the week. A real niche. I heard WTF Radio on February 12th on 1720 kHz USB at 0237 UTC. The signal is very good, but I get a lot of noise on these lower frequencies in my location, and I should have tried my R390A, which seems to have, it seems to be much less susceptible to noise. So that's tonight's roundup of audio clips on Hobby Broadcasting Radio. And coming up is an interview with the dude.
And now here's tonight's feature interview with the dude, who operates Real Free Radio, AM 610, AM 1620, and auxiliary station 49.870 megahertz NBFM.
So, when I was working on a few questions for you and an introduction, I was having some difficulties trying to categorize your hobby activities. So finally I decided that the best way to describe you is that if there's a legal low-power way to broadcast on any frequency, the dude will build or modify equipment to make it work, and will be operating there. Does that sound about right?
Well, seeing that now that I've rebooted up 49 megahertz as an auxiliary station, I guess I could have to say that's a yes. Let's just say I will take advantage of any loopholes I possibly can affordably. How about that?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty much what I was thinking of. Yeah, you brought up the 49 megahertz. That's pretty great. What is it that you do?
Right now, I guess you could say I am running, maxing out carrier current broadcasting, which is feeding audio to the Park 15 antenna transmitter. You know, that's less than 100 milliwatts. AM 1620 is that one. I consider that my main station because we're in kind of a semi-rural area, and it's, yeah, homes around here are kind of spaced out. That's probably my best daytime signal is AM 1620. And I believe the heating effect of the output is an amazing 92 milliwatts. Ooh, flamethrower there, yeah. It is the IM radio one that Radio Systems had. You've heard of the talking house, and it's a modification of that, except the audio was a little bit better than that. Came with a few problems, at least I thought it did, and now somebody else has taken on to that, onto the design, but I added better grounding on the chassis, which didn't give you more power, but it did make the audio sound a lot cleaner. The thing also has phase modulation, phantom modulation. In other words, you try to listen to it on sideband, and you hear a lot of warbling on that. I managed to reduce that by half. Also, I got rid of the little whip antenna that came with it that was, not really resonant with anything, and made a 9-foot copper 5/8 diameter pipe as my main radiator for that. So I'm using my capacitive top hat. Now, is that permissible? Well, you know, supposedly they say that the antenna has to be, including the conductor carrying it, and even grounding, has to be, 10 feet or 3 meters long?
Yeah.
And the capacitive top hat, well, here's the thing. Our loophole is They don't say how wide the antenna has to be. And I'm also with a couple of other Part 15ers. It's like Boomer, you know, you've heard of Boomer the dog on, with his AM station, carrier current station, AM 690, who's in stereo, and he's running with it, I think, even better than I am in some ways. He even calculated that I might get like a 6 to 10% efficiency by just having a capacitive top hat with AM 1620. And I think he's running the money there when he did that calculation for me. So I have a lot of help in trying to get this all together. So, you know, and what's the other guy that's over there over over in Ohio? That's Bob, who's running MRAM 1500. Learning from some of his stuff of what he's doing, he's also built an antenna where he has a center load, you know, coil. I don't think he's running a top hat, but I think he's running ground radials. And so there's various methods to make that very short, inefficient antenna slightly more efficient. So I'm still trying to max that out for the most part. The auxiliary station on 49.870 megahertz that we just put on back in January, that was my suggestion. I did it actually 10 years ago because back then you had baby monitors and cordless telephones around here, and I figured I'd give it a shot, but didn't figure anybody was doing anything with it at the time. I was having a lot of problems just trying to keep it going, and just went away from that. I don't do anything FM at all. There's just such a witch hunt on FM broadcast band between, you know, 88 and 108 megahertz, so I'm pretty much avoiding that as far as transmitting goes, with one exception, low power FM, you know, to low power legalized licensed FM stations that I've done programming for. I've done a show called Capital Rips. Yeah, I was asked, hey, can you do a middle show for us? You know, when WTSQLP 88.1 FM in Charleston started, I'm like, it's been a while since I've done something like that. So I got on there, and I guess the response I got from that was, I can't believe all the obscure artists you have there. It's like, well, you know, I guess that's a good thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, here's what I'm doing also for low power FM is I'm in a dead spot for that station right here because I am tied up against a hill over in about 17 miles away from their transmitter site. And so I'm using my, they're doing their fund drive right now for 2023. And I'm piping in their fund drive where they got live DJs. Of course, they're saying, hey, you know, we want to raise $20,000, you know, to keep this station on the air. And I'm just letting them have my airtime for the weekend. And they dig it completely because they're being heard someplace that normally they wouldn't be heard except by maybe the internet. But, you know, you go out in the middle of a field and it'll sound great. And AM610. Even though it's limited in its range and carrier current, it does have a 10 kilohertz bandwidth and sounds wonderful. And even the IM radio radio systems transmitter, that's AM 1620, that I think is maxed out about 8 kilohertz in audio bandwidth. But it sounds like mono FM, though. I mean, when you equalize it, fairly well. So I'm not stereo, but I have decent audio there. And then at nighttime, that's where the auxiliary station comes in. You want to listen to my station a quarter of a mile away or further at nighttime? Anybody with a scanner radio, 49.870 megahertz. And that's all it is, just modified baby monitors. I'm not the only person doing this, apparently. I have a link on the HFU, HF Underground there. That, and I think Boomer actually was the one that led me to this, too, about this guy over in Long Island that was like, hey, I'm using baby monitor frequencies to go and use as like a little relay for, you know, listen to anything from ham repeaters to talk shows or whatever. And as far as we know, it's totally permissible. So that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to do what I can permissibly because there's just such a witch hunt on anything that's considered unlicensed, which is weird because everyone's trying to push online streaming and they're saying that, hey, no, nobody has an audience on AM and FM radio, but well, why is there such a witch hunt for anybody that is so-called doing what's called free radio or pirate radio? you know, I mean, when they're using, let's say, more than the allowed steel strings. So, it makes you wonder. I mean, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. And it's even illegal in a lot of states. Is it now nationwide illegal, I guess, to be on the AM and FM broadcast bands without a license running with the allowable Part 15 powers?
Including the Part 15 or above?
If you're past the Part 15 powers, illegally in the United States, lawfully. I mean, before it was FCC violation that was, as you would put it, let's say years ago, an administrative violation, but didn't they make it in Congress a law now? Or is that just only several states, but they haven't voted nationwide yet?
Yeah, I'm not positive. I know that it is in a few states like New York and New Jersey and Florida for sure.
Florida, yeah. Yeah, and I know that they're trying to push for it to be nationwide, but I don't know if they got that far. So, you know, they're trying to make it so it was, instead of just an administrative violation that you're doing, that they were actually going to make it legal, or they would have to have, you know, the police actually go against it and... You know, you'd have to face jail time, super fines, and everything else there. So in other words, the witch hunt just seems to be growing in this. So, which is weird. I mean, if they're talking about trying to kill AM and FM terrestrial broadcasting, why is there such a witch hunt on anybody trying to do it beyond what's considered Part 15 allowable practices to do it?
Yeah, I agree. It's
you think?
Fortunately, they haven't been doing that with shortwave, but...
Yeah, well, I've even experimented with that, too. I with Part 15, almost about 6 or 7 years ago. I actually had the... You ever heard of the Pixie transmitter?
No.
It's a little transmitter that somebody says that you can operate about 2 milliwatts on the frequency of 13.560 megahertz. And a lot of the beacon people use that. And in fact, I remember, what was it, about 7 or 8 years ago, there's this guy, what was he? Was he up in Wisconsin, I think, called the GNK station. A lot of people call them GNK or call them Gunk. And it was just GNK and CW, you know, Morse code, that he was transmitting, and he swore he was only doing 4 milliwatts. I had to contact that guy. I tried contacting him to try to say, verify, hey, we're hearing you down here in West Virginia, and, not a reply there, but I was able to hear that. But here I made right from the ground up, out of trash components, a 2 milliwatt AM 13.560 megahertz transmitter, and the only thing that I had that was brand new was Fearless Fred of Radio Garbanzo donated the crystals to me. I was like, cool. So I made this thing so incredibly clean, no phantom phase modulation or FM to it whatsoever, 8-element filter on it, and super clean, and I actually had a couple of people from about 5 or 6 miles away, actually being able to receive it, a 20-meter amateur radio 14 megahertz beam pointing towards my direction probably could have heard this, I don't think maybe 10 miles, but, several miles easily, and one guy was probably about maybe 4 miles away when he was hearing me off of his long wire, so it's like, wow, not strong, but he was able to hear it, and we're talking like, a carry of about, 2 milliwatts? So, then the big freaks, objected big time to what I was doing, saying that, hey, we're trying to get our signal, heard out there, coast to coast, and here you are going on AM with us. And even Glenn Hauser emailed me saying that this wasn't a good idea, so I took it fine.
Well, so how many people heard that beyond the couple guys at 4 and 8 miles?
As far as I know, I don't think anybody did, but they didn't like the idea that there's heterodyne in there. So they pretty much, I guess, emailed Bob me about it and objected it completely. So I caved in and it's like, all right, I'll check this off. And it's like, ooh, 49 megahertz. Hey, we can go back to that again. Because, 14 megahertz, 13 megahertz. Let's see now, that band is open, 40% of the year? And whereas, 49 megahertz distance, yeah, there are people that are trying to make beacons out of 49 megahertz, but that might be only maybe not even a quarter of a percent time that might possibly be open to anybody could hear that. So no one's bothered me on there. So I've been doing that now since the 15th of January. Yeah, I took a 10-year hiatus on 49 megahertz, and then by suggestion again, like I said, Boomer says, hey, you doing anything with 49 megs? I'm like, well, no, but I might look into it, and I'd listen for an entire week. Nothing was on 49 megahertz here anymore. No cordless phones, no baby monitors, no pagers, beepers, no military stuff. And after a week, I decided, okay, well, I've got this baby monitor on 49870 megahertz already tapped in, pulled away. I just had to get it back out, remount it over into a pretty clear high place, and put audio to it, and boom, there we are. maybe putting out 10 milliwatts, if that. So I think I'm well within the field strength of that one. And, of course, it's a little lower in frequency, very narrow bandwidth on narrow band FM. How far is that reaching? I've been able to get it about a mile, not strong, on a 6-meter handy-talkie. any scanner, of course, could pick this up, just punch in 49.870 megahertz. And what's nice about this is I call it an auxiliary station because at nighttime, when AM 1620 and AM 610 get bombed by distant propagation at night, it doesn't affect 49.870. So, there we go. I mean, that's another loophole to use. So it's like, well, let's try it for a while. And it's like, plug it, get it, and forget about it. And almost 2 months now on air back with that. So I figured I'll give that a shot, and we'll see how that works.
So have you tried networking any of these stations to set up like a couple transmitters on exactly the same frequency and feeding them like from the internet with like an audio feed?
I've thought about it, and even I had a boss when I worked in television. He said, you know what, and this was over 20 years ago, he says satellite renting of an audio channel was cheaper or more affordable. He says, if you wanted to, you could, let's say, you know, set up a Park 15 AM station someplace, like in an office complex, have a broadcast out of it, and beat it with satellite programming. I thought about doing that. This was before the internet, high-speed internet was really kicking in, but now that would be the way to go. But, of course, when the modem locks up or the internet goes down and it doesn't reset, well, then you got to go out there to go and, review it again. So that's the one part that's kind of bad, because people have been looking at that also as an STL, student transmitter link, for low-power FM. In fact, people were asking me, hey, can we do this to feed our low-power FM station, through DSL? Or through a cable modem. It's like, that's doable, but when it goes down or something locks up, you still have to go out there to go and reset that, and that's always going to be kind of a pain. So, that's the part about, thinking about doing stuff like that's remote. I'm not getting paid to do any of this, by the way. This is all free time stuff. So, that's the thing. I'm not making any money doing any of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Park 15 station that I heard north of Philly where I don't know how many different transmitters he had networked, but he had at least a few networked and featured a lot of old-time radio shows. And I drove for, I think, about 10 miles of just hearing the station continuously. It's pretty awesome.
That is unreal. Yeah, I mean, I know that we've talked about it. Back in the 90s, I remember Boomer and I talking about it. A couple other people I know were talking about it. I mean, we've done the deal where we would have, let's say, a network of small stations where you would send programs to each other and then air it. We've done that before. And now you could do, and now basically it's what podcasting is now, when you think about it. So yeah. It's almost a predecessor of podcasting. Here's the other thing. I mean, if you put on a 15 AM station now, no limit to what you could put on it, pretty much. It could be non-commercial, could be commercial programming, could be... there's always podcasters out there that are looking for an audience and saying, hey, can I go and air your podcast? And the thing it is, that most of them will say, yes, can you please, you know? Yeah, so there are a lot of folks out there that are looking to do this. I mean, you know, podcasters, for instance, we have... podcaster here locally that called it's supposed to be kind of like a spoof of a you remember the morning zoos that radio stations used to do back in the 80s and the 90s? Yeah, they were doing a podcast of that called The Four Ship, and they did 75 shows, and then unfortunately they weren't able to make the money back on it like they were hoping to, but I was able to put them on two low-power FM stations, and the rest were Part 15 stations, and they were tickled pink because of that, but then, I don't know if they had a falling out with each other or what, but it worked for about a year and a half, and then I never heard from them again afterwards.
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens. I mean, like...
Well, yeah, all the time, yeah.
Your kind of longevity isn't normal.
Well, no, and that's a thing here also. In other words, yeah, well, Part 15 years, you get long, people do it long term, so we've been 40 years of doing this now, so that's why I agreed to also an interview in March, because this is my celebration and commemoration of doing this stuff for about 40 years now, which I consider myself late making, when you consider other people have been doing this since the 60s, the 50s, the 40s, even the 1930s, I consider myself late in the game. Well, Boomer, I guess, has been doing it since, what, the 70s? So, yeah. But I could say there's one thing that I kind of stuck with it on and off over the years. It's doing, let's say, the Part 15 broadcasting now.
So, what programming do you air?
Right now, like I said, I'm airing WTSQ LP's Fun Drive. Or I'll just put them on normally on a weekend, because they appreciate me putting them on in the dead spot. During the holidays, where there's like a holiday, like Monday, or like a 4 or 5 day weekend, I'll run podcasts of shows that I guess you would call them alternative programming. Yeah. And you know, pretty much run them, as well as, let's say, free radio stations, including free radio, let's say, remember the pirate stations from the time. Well, pirate stations like, of course, the Radio Garbanzos, well, the cleaner ones. They have running WDRR just for rock and roll radio. I've run one called, of course, I think everybody remembers Radio USA at the time. I mean, I've run even a couple of those. So I would run those as, let's say, extra programs. And you know that maybe they might be heard on stuff like WBCQ Shortwave, but not necessarily. During the weekdays, I'm pretty much, you know, running a Wi-Fi radio. You know, one of those great digital Wi-Fi radios, which has better digital audio converter, so it sounds better and doesn't give you digital artifacts. And I'm running, you know, music and talk, alternative talk programs during the weekdays. And then the stations kind of run themselves when I have to work 6 days a week.
Yeah.
So, yeah. In other words, the hard part was to try to get everything and get all the bugs working. But once you get it going, I mean, now programming has not gotten hard. And, you know, I mean, when one podcast drops out or I can't get it anymore, then I'll try to find another one, you know, to put on. Like Amateur Radio Newsline, I've had on it going on since, oh gosh, since the 1990s, I've been able to get. But now that you can get them offline, you do have to do a little bit of editing, so you don't have the repeater ID time after 10 minutes. So it's 5 tones I may take out, or I take out their cue thing saying, I'll do the woo-boos in 3, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You know, I would edit. I would do, like, minimum edits of that. Or if someone's really low in their voice quality, I might add a little compression to it. I use a lot of freeware, like Audacity. Audacity is pretty much revolutionized what I do as far as, let's say, editing goes. Yeah, well, it certainly made things a lot easier. Other people still use a Cool Edit Pro, and software is kind of like that. But remember an article that I wrote in Hobby Broadcast Magazine of how to reduce FM chirping from high frequencies getting into FM stereo transmitters?
Yep.
Well, guess what? I'm using that technique to reduce, let's say, harsh S's and T's. You know, because a lot of people, when they start out podcasting, guess what they don't use? They don't use something called a de-essing unit. And that, you know, over a computer or over your smartphone, it's not usually a problem. But when you put that over a system that has processing and, you know, adds extra compression to it, those S's and T's could be really harsh. So I'm using those techniques, except I'm using it to reduce. I'm using an EQ and a 32 band equalizer to reduce as a de-essing unit. So there we go. Recycle, renew. How about that?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be back in a few minutes with more of our interview with the Duke. Updates about Hobby Broadcasting Radio and our other activities. Check out the Hobby Broadcasting blogspot at hobbybroadcasting.blogspot.com. hobbybroadcasting.blogspot.com. To read updates from the Duke, go to vk.com/realfreeradio. That's victorkilo.com/realfreeradio.
Hobby Broadcasting Radio, 5130 kilohertz shortwave.
And now we return for part two of our interview with the Duke of Real Free Radio. AM 610, AM 1620, and auxiliary station 49.870 megahertz NBFM.
One thing that I was going to ask earlier, for your capacitance top hat, what do you use?
Believe it or not, it's a trashed 6-meter halo from the 1970s. It was this double loop that was, what was it, about 30 inches in diameter. I took it apart, and now that loop, it kind of looks like, you know, about 2 or 3 crescents when you look up at the top of the thing. I think I've got a photo of it somewhere. You might be able to look at it. Should I give you the website that I've got? My social media is this. It's not Facebook. It's not Twitter. It's not MySpace. It's anymore. It's not TikTok, not Instagram, but it is VK.com. And it was a band that actually led me on to this page here when I was having trouble with MySpace at the time. And I was starting to already see the problems with Twitter and Facebook, and this was 7 years ago. So, you know, they go to vk.com/realfreeradio, like it's all one word, vk.com/realfreeradio. And I do have some photos in there. Hopefully most people can see that are members of it. I've also got links to a couple other pages there. I've got links to a archive.org page, which, by the way, has your interview there with Art Bell. that was a neat thing to capture. And also, I have a minds.com page. I believe is that Mike Adams? I think the Health Ranger that started that. And I'm trying to do Part 15 stuff there, but I really should spend more time trying to do so. But I've got more photos of what the top hat of the antenna looks like there. In other words, it doesn't look like a bicycle wheel with spokes on it there. I wanted to find something that was really lightweight that I could put up. And so this was copper going on to aluminum. And it's like, well, wait, it's dissimilar metals. What are you doing there? Well, that low in frequency, you can get away with using silicon vacuum grease as a means to and clamp down onto your metal that way. And it works like an anti-seize. And you have to think about that stuff. And just low in frequency, you can get away with doing that. Higher frequencies, you have the skin effect. Not recommended, but low frequencies in medium wave, AM 1620, I can get away with doing that. So all the critical connections, I'm putting vacuum grease where I'm using, let's say, steel to copper, lead to copper, aluminum to copper, aluminum to steel. And, when you have something outside, you want it to last as long as possible. And, knock on whatever I can knock on around here. You know, I've also tried to add lightning protection, although it will never take a direct spike, but it will take close spikes, and it has. I even put a lightning arrestor to it also. Yeah, which is something I got from living with amateur radio stuff there. And part of what I've learned from doing what I'm doing is from amateur radio stuff, like 73. Remember what the 73 magazines used to be there from Wayne Green?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those are big and thick back in the 70s? And those people knew their stuff. It's like that stuff is a wealth of information. I still keep these magazines, or if people offer them to me, I'll take them over QST or, I'll still take CQ magazines, but 73, those people really knew their stuff. And also the amateur radio handbooks are an absolute. Absolute. It's true to spread. Told me years, it's like, hey, don't knock that stuff. That stuff is a wealth of information. And, you can have it on the computer. You can look up a lot of stuff online, but there's a lot of stuff that won't be online that they have in print. And in those handbooks and in those magazines, it's a wealth of material to keep. And case of even my college textbooks are still worth keeping, whereas everybody else, let's say, like, when they went to be seniors, they sold their textbooks to freshmen, to the undergrads. Well, I kept my stuff, and they use it as a reference, and it still has, because it's like I've gone through the material, so I know where to look back in that stuff. And now I'm kind of lazier doing the internet, but for the longest time, even still once in a while, I'll still refer to some of those textbooks, for some information that I can't easily find online, because, I've already gone through it. So, if you find college books, or you go to a library sale and you find stuff like that, by all means, buy it up. Because you never know. If crap happens again, like this last weekend, we didn't have power here for 20 hours. Yes, I was off air. And we still have communities here from that major windstorm that are still without power around here. I'm working on a system where I can try to have emergency power, so it's Boomer of AM690, so I can have his stations on. Because as it is, I can run my stations for about a half an hour off the UPSs, and then, past 30 minutes. then you got to reset everything when power comes right back on here, so...
The solar generators are getting a lot more common and affordable.
Yeah, they're starting to, And I might kind of go that route myself there. There's still, I thought about running, let's say, a generator off the gas lines here, but now look at this war. Here's the thing. Are we going backwards in everything? Because, now there seems to be this war on natural gas here, where it's like, hey, wouldn't it be great to have something powered off-grid by using natural gas? Well, what happens if the natural gas gets turned off? Solar might be the way to go, and wind power might be the way to go here. Not without their faults, because you have to have battery backups, and I'll tell you what, batteries are not any cheaper. In fact, I think batteries are getting more expensive. So, we still have some things to work out there.
A lot of things to work out.
You could run a Part 15 AM station just off-grid completely. I've heard of some people doing it. I'm not doing it yet, but Boomer was thinking about running. He's got, the podcaster station where he's going to use AM 1620, but he's trying to figure out how he's going to do it. He wants to, of course, pull it away from his house a little bit further and calls it into, I recommended like a cooler for him to mount it in, but he also wants to see if he can have it off-grid, run it off of solar, run it off of batteries. I'm like, there you go. I mean, that'd be useful. As long as you keep programming going to it when you lose power. Here's the thing. I had Noah I even have a NOAA weather radio, by the way. Oh, by the way, here's one thing that the FCC did complain about Part 15 AM stations, and that was that they are not required to have emergency alert systems in there, and that kind of bothered them. I forgot who made that comment. I think it was in hobbybroadcaster.net or something like that. It was one of those, or was it part15.us? Somebody made that comment. So that's when I ran into this project 3 years ago called Ye Poor Man's Emergency Alert System. Well, what is it? It cues on the system with the weather radio. And nowadays, the weather radio does, well, you know, amber alerts. If there's a national emergency, it's supposed to broadcast that too. That is, you can set the weather radio so it hits all alerts. It even does the weekly tests as they do every Wednesday here. So, in other words, you'll be listening to a program, then around 11 o'clock in the morning, I'll hear over my stations, I'll hear the alert tone go over, and then I'll hear the National Weather Service saying, conducting a test, weekly test. So,
that's
so
pretty cool.
There we go. That's a cheap way to do it, and I put it on my archive page there on how to do that. I don't know if you have that information or not, or I could forward it to you there, but there's other ways to do it. Here, somebody thought of using a Kenwood car stereo that actually can go and activate with NOAA weather radio or the emergency alert system. But I went with the weather radio route there to go do it. And it's been running it's kind of a prototype because components are exposed and I've got wires running up to the weather radio. But it's been running pretty flawless for over 3 years now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome to get it set up like that.
I've got it, so my timer is a charge capacitor to a relay. Well, a charge capacitor to the base of a transistor, which powers the relay, and then after, 150 seconds, it'll kick you off. But after 150 seconds, that's when you're going to pretty much know what the alert is for the most part. So you're going to get most of your information at that point anyway there. So you're really not going to miss anything if they keep it going. But I do have a manual overdrive. If I'm here and they do go over, I could just flick it on and keep it there. Or if I want to dump out of it, I even have a dump switch to discharge the capacitor. It's all trial and error, but I'll tell you what. There we go. And how many hits does it have there? Does it have over 300 hits, I think, on archive.org? So someone's been checking it out.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And here's the thing about Part 15 of broadcasting also. It's like, well, who's going to want to do it? I don't know if you've ever, how often you go to eBay, but anytime you see anything from Radio Systems or LPB Incorporated, you know, Low Power Broadcasting Incorporated, their transmitters or their couplers, they're not on there very long. They get bought out almost immediately. So somebody wants that stuff. Now, you can say, well, maybe the FCC is doing it, or maybe government agencies are doing it, so, it doesn't go out there to the populace. But, that stuff is still permissible to use. It's also got the FCC approvals on that stuff there, too. So,
yeah, I know a lot of people.
That stuff when it comes up for sale.
Yeah, a lot of people are after the LPB stuff, and it's just because it's quality, because it's not like there isn't, there are a lot of little low-power transmitters on there that you can buy on eBay.
Well, yeah, there is, but, get the stuff that is tried and true.
Exactly.
It has FCC approval, yeah. I mean, you want to try to stay as permissible and try to stay out of trouble as much as possible if you can, so... Trying to do that around here.
That's why the LPB stuff keeps getting snapped up.
Yeah, and you could do the kit thing here also. I mean, that's the way around, let's say, the FCC stuff is to do it in kit form, to build it, or you could have stuff sent to you via kit form. I know that guy PLL.GR. His transmitters are definitely affordable, really good quality, and the harmonics pressure is there, the audio quality is there. But he says it would have been too expensive for him to have FCC approval. And it's like, well, so my suggestion to him was like, well, do it in, let's say, do it in your transmitter pieces and have them put it together as a kit. And that's the way around it. Supposedly, I think that's the way around it. So, Panaxis did that for years. The Ramsey did it for years. Too bad we lost both of those companies.
Yeah, definitely. Although at least there are a lot of other startups, like the one that you mentioned, and I know that I've seen ones from like Japan and Serbia or Croatia or somewhere, and Turkey, and so there are a lot of other places that are, or people who are stepping up and building things.
Yeah, I mean, you can still do a search on, let's see now, what's that one out of Canada that's out there? Is that, that's not the podcaster, is it?
Sure.
I haven't bought one, but I understand that Carl Blair, who did the Low Power Hour, has bought one of those. And apparently the audio is really good on those. So, and like I said, Boomer has the podcaster, you know, which is basically looks like a steel box, you know, with a 10-foot aluminum antenna on it. Yeah, whereas me, I'm using some kind of separate components here. I also made it a little bit different also to where I've mounted my my stuff and antennas. Here's the thing. Where can you mount something that supposedly you only have to hit the transmitter and the antenna right about the same place? Well, if you have a garage, you know, mount them on the eaves of a garage, or if you can go outside of an attic, mount it that way. I mean, you know, the garage was a little bit easier because at least I can work on stuff from the inside and still have it radiating outside. There's ways to be clever, and then there's ways of where I've heard of people putting something, mounting a box on a tree. There's a lot of little things you could do there, and then, of course, carrier current seems to scare people because you're mounting to the power lines or coupling to the power lines. You might say, well, what are people doing for carrier current, you know, that they're not afraid of? Well, they've been doing it for years. Wireless FM intercoms. Those are carrier current because they go through the wiring of your house. You know, and you can still buy those. You know, most of them being used. I don't know if any new ones are being out there, but Radio Shack had them. Novus, I think, was one that I thought was a quality one, and had a couple of those. Darn if I remember where those went. And those transmit at a very low frequency into the experimenter's band, 160 kHz to 190 kHz, that low in frequency. And most of them are FM, but there are a few that are AM as well. But that's another place you could probably experiment too. I mean, if you don't want to do the AM broadcast band, but you want to get something that's already built, you can get one of those intercom units and tap the audio of one of those to go run programming. And where can you hear it? You can hear it on, let's say, you got a receiver that goes down to 100, you know, I usually go down to the middle of the band, 175 kilohertz. Well, there you go. That's another way to go. And on that low frequency, you'll be surprised. Like, maybe anywhere from 5 to 10 milliwatts will actually carry possibly up to a quarter to a half a mile, maybe even beyond the first couple transformers. So that's another way to go. You know, if you don't want to go and build AM in the AM broadcast band, and you don't want to go and shell out the money for, you know, the couplers from, or build the couplers, you know, like what Radio Systems or LPB had. So I'm trying to find a really quick way. You know, in other words, if they can make an affordable, for $30 at the time, wireless intercoms, you know, that could go right into house wiring via carrier current, it's like, well, wait a minute, can we do the same thing with carrier current, where anybody could just plug in a device and boom, they're on the air to maybe anywhere from 100 milliwatts to an entire watt, and it's permissible, they could actually go several watts.
Yeah.
Although they might be overloading, let's say, stuff over in their house and may have problems with ground loop or whatever, but Boomer and I were working on ways here for whatever free time we get to try to find something that would be affordable to build, you know, make it so anybody could, I mean, if they could do wireless intercoms, why can't they do that with carrier current? And I don't see why you can't.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing really with carrier current is just where the closest pole pig is.
That too, yes. In fact, I am neutral injecting. In other words, I'm not going to the hot, I'm not going to the, well, I guess you could say I'm kind of going to the ground here. I'm going to the neutral of the power lines, and I'm doing it right outside the house where it comes into the house. right before the power pole, the power meter. Thus far, you know, the power company hasn't said anything about it, so where did I get the idea? James Cunningham. I read about his book where he's doing that, and that makes sense. It's like, why load up in the house except for experimentation? We can load up outside the house, neutral inject that way. Yeah, and that way you can be closer to, the pole. The pole's out there on the street. And it does help reduce the amount of RF coming back into the house, which is usually the biggest problem. I'm only running a carrier of about 500 milliwatts on AM 610. Well, big reason here is because it doesn't matter if I'm, let's say, 100 milliwatts or 10 watts going one direction. The transformers do get me here. We have limited power lines going up and down the street that I live on here. When I lived in other locations where it branched out, 100 milliwatts went probably like half a mile in a couple directions. But here, not so much. I found out that carrier current, it's useful for a little bit. I'm going up and down the street here, maybe about a quarter of a mile or so, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to do the best of both worlds here. And also, I'm using it as my STL for AM 1620. Yeah, there you go. Best of both worlds there. Another location I was at, I actually was using a watt and a half, AM 600. I heard that over 3 miles away in some places. And
yeah,
that was across
awesome.
Different townships, and I remember going someplace where all the power lines were in this new cul-de-sac, where all the power lines I knew were underground, but for some reason they were radiating from under the ground right to the car stereo, so you could still pick it up there. It's like, I was over a mile away, I'm like, still here in my station. It's like, whoa, that's cool. So, it is possible, and I was in another area where I was using only 100 milliwatts with a PanAxis AM100 transmitter. That was a kit form that PanAxis had there from Curtis Wilson, and I just went straight 100 milliwatts, and I was covering, better than, like I said, half a mile down the street one way, and I was covering up over into an intersection or branched off and probably going a quarter mile or more in every other direction. So I thought, hey, 100 milliwatts is doing that? And yeah, you did have to be kind of close to, let's say, like power pack boxes and stuff, but, you know, they were still going into, that signal was going into people's homes, and 100 milliwatts, you know, I wasn't interfering with anybody. So I thought that was really neat here, too. Yeah, and I tried the radiating system back in the 1990s here. Yeah, I was lucky if I got maybe 50 feet, you know, going to 100. I was experimenting with, 100 millihenry coil going to a 10-foot antenna that I made out of just, you know, a copper wire. And like I said, I wasn't getting out very far at all. That's like, oh, this sucks. So that's why I went carrier current for a while and still using it. And Bloomer, you have to go talk to him about his station there, AM 690. I mean, he's really running with it there, I guess, a full 5 watts. And like I said, he's running AM stereo. It's amazing what he's doing with his. And he's using he's running streams also in some podcasts, but he's basically running programming that's right off of automation software. Whereas I'll use automation software as a means of computer-aided, but not computer-dependent. I learned my lesson in television and commercial radio broadcasting not to do that.
We're going to have to stop here because we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on the air and giving us information about Part 15 and carrier current broadcasting.
All right, well, hey, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, hey, who knows? Hey, I hope I can catch you before the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, definitely have to work on that.
All right, well, have a good one then, and thanks again, and we'll see what happens, and let's see if we can get you this, not only crazy year, but let's see if we can get you this crazy decade. So, I mean, we're just gonna have to keep radio alive, I guess.
If you would like to write to Hobby Broadcasting Radio, whether to comment on our programs or for QSL, Our email address is info@hobbybroadcasting.com. info@hobbybroadcasting.com. Or Hobby Broadcasting Radio, P.O. Box 109, Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania, 17214. Hobby Broadcasting Radio, P.O. Box 109, Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania, 17214. We're on the radio Andula transmitter of WBCQ at 5130 kilohertz every third Thursday. So pull up your calendar app. Our next broadcast is on April 20th at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, which is UTC, April 21 at 0400. We hope you'll join us then. This has been a production of Hobby Broadcasting Radio.
This is the world-famous WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA.
This is the planet. Here for you, WBCQ.
WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is Radio Angela.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Day.